Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. You may have just heard the promo, but yeah, Smokies Night, Fan Run Night, Smoky Stadium, May 30th. We're going to try to blow it out and do a big event and have some listeners up there, give some tickets away, hang out with us. Feel like it's all but confirmed that I'm throwing the first pitch, although now I hear that two people are throwing first pitches. So, like, as long as we consider mine the first pitch and the one right after it the second pitch, or like, I'm going to make sure I throw just a little bit before the person. Because, like, yeah, you said that we need two first pitches, so two people. So I'm just going to throw at least like a half a second before them. That way mine's actually first.
Well, no, you do one and then you do the other.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah, it wouldn't be together.
Are you sure? Because I was picturing like side by side people would do it and like have two catchers out there. Because I've seen places do that before at baseball where they kind of just throw
that's true.
Two at the same time, not one after the other.
Yeah, to be honest, we really didn't dissect it too much so in the meeting. But
so just note, I'm throwing mine a half second earlier than everybody else. I'm going a little bit early.
Well, we still have to have a vote. Well, it could be
I've made it off. I've made it very clear, Bob, that this is one thing that is a non-starter for me.
I've heard Marcus is pitching it.
He can be the second, and I feel like he will make my first pitch look even better if he's the one out there throwing it. So, like, yeah, I'm fine with Marcus being the second person. I'll be a little bit sharper dressed, and, you know, it'd be nice to stand next to Marcus. I'm fine with that.
Like a Smokies uniform?
No, I'm not going to do that. Although, like, you know, the boss man says he's going to make some special fan-run baseball uniforms. So I imagine that's what I'll be rocking.
Those will be fire, as Jack would say.
They will be fire. I've seen the designs. So we're gonna have I think 37 of those that were given away. I think is the number they've settled on. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe it was.
Could he make you some matching pants for that jersey?
You want me to wear full uniform, Sam? No, I'm not. I'm not doing that. Save the date, May 30th. Okay, save the date, May 30th.
The mascot will be out there for the first pitch too. Seriously. So
might throw it into him like in Varsity Blues when James Vanderbeek, instead of killing the clock, he just kept throwing it at the mascot. You ever seen that movie, Sam?
I have seen Varsity Blues.
It seems a little impractical. Like, hey, we're trying to run a very fast offense. Let me drop back and throw it 4 seconds away to hit the guy off the horse. Seems like that's just, you know, what Mox was. You know, Mox was a rebel like that. Let's hit some headlines from the night before. What is that alarm going off? Does anybody else hear that?
Yeah, I hear that too.
Yeah. You hear it, though?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, at least we've made progress from the old studio where you guys just act like you never heard the noises I heard.
That was one time, and that wasn't actually happening either.
Yeah,
that was just in your head.
At least you guys are not gaslighting me anymore. But so let's hit some hour two headlines, some stuff you missed from yesterday. It's called About Last Night.
Thank you. Tennessee baseball picks up a 12-4 victory midweek game over Western Carolina. Obviously, not too much to touch there, but Billy Amick absolutely – went off. Career night, 3-for-5, 7 RBIs, drove in 7 of the team's 12, hits one out of the stadium. Kavars Tears reaches down and just like a one-handed oppo homer, basically down and away in the zone, just poked it out there basically 400 feet. Offense was working after you got into a little bit of trouble there. Thought you had a great game from your bullpen. Dylan Loy got the start, and then Andrew Banky, Marcus Phillips, Matthew Dallas, and J.J. Garcia kind of shored things up there for that midweek game.
Feels like there's a plan with Marcus Phillips, don't you think? I mean, they're starting to really – he's getting some run now, and I don't know. I just wonder if that's building him to be an option later in the season.
Oh, 1,000%. And Kirby talked about that yesterday. You know, like I think his – just getting one out – like he did against Kentucky was so big for his confidence and his trust from the coaching staff. And then, it did seem like he carried himself a little bit differently yesterday when he got on the mound. So I do think you're going to add him to the bullpen because essentially he's been a non-factor. And you're going to add, you know, A.J. Russell at some point. So Tennessee needs a couple arms. And I do think they should be able to get them. You talked about Billy Amick, monster game. Do it on the road in the SEC.
Okay.
I don't mean that in a bad way, but, like, you know, for a while we called him the best transfer in the country, that he might be the best transfer in the country. I need him to step up a little bit more, especially on the road. He mashes at home.
He did get his appendix taken out,
John. He did. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But he hit a home run his first at bat afterwards. Yeah. I mean, he's clearly healthy. I'm not talking about where were your stats those two, you know, week you're out of the game. I'm not saying that. You come back, either you're injured or you're hurt. And everybody's hurt, okay? But if you're playing, you're not injured. You can't say you're injured if you're actually on the field. He had a home run his first at bat against LSU, right?
Yeah.
Was it LSU, right? His first pitch.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like if you can hit a home run your first pitch, you're back to speed, at least somewhat. I didn't feel like he did much for us against Kentucky. I want to see him do it.
It's fair.
You're going to need him. Like, yeah, absolutely. You're going to need him to be a star.
One of your best
players. Yeah, you're going to need him to be a star. And I'm not even pointing out the error that cost us the game against Kentucky game one. I wasn't even pointing that out.
But yeah, I would have said his defense is maybe one of the issue. But
you know, his defense, the fielding percentage has been on the decline a little bit. You know, he had got off to a really hot start. You're like, wow, Clemson, how'd they let this guy go? And then you've seen a little bit of the defense. Like, oh, okay, so maybe not the best defender. But if you can rake, we can live with it. I still feel like he's been raking at all times.
Speaking of raking, Blake Burke, 2-for-4, hitting streak continues.
Yeah. Beast.
Yeah. He is.
Next up,
some interesting stuff here in terms of Group of Five football. Derek Dooley yesterday comes out and has basically been trying to get some private equity firms to create a Group of Five.
Yeah, playoff. Save that. Let's talk about that next. Let's do a segment on that. Yeah, okay. Let's skip that because that's a big college football story there.
Caitlin Clark, she has reached the numbers have come out basically on her Nike agreement. Obviously, we know she signs with Nike. But that turns into an 8-year, $28 million deal. Biggest one in women's basketball history. Obviously, you would expect someone of her caliber to be able to get a deal like this, but $28 million paid handsomely. Some people think it was even an underpay.
Don't use the word handsomely. She's a lady, okay? Paid beautifully. You know, when you saw the details of the other offers, I don't know if she took the right one. The reports were Under Armour offered 4 years, $16 million. Adidas was 4 years, $6 million, which is almost offensive. Puma showed interest, but was apparently scared by the bidding war starting at $3 million. I guess they're like, hey, we're here for a bargain. Oh, wait, you guys are actually getting some money out. Never mind, we're out of here. You know, just from a year's perspective, if I'm her, I'm probably taking the Under Armour 4 year, $16 million. That way I can get back to the market when maybe I'm even a bigger star. Maybe that second shoe, if you prove that you're a commodity, you could get some bigger money. Like if you prove like, hey, people are willing to buy women's shoes and like, hey, I actually am an icon and I am a trailblazer. But like the Nike check is hard to like walk away from. And I don't mean the money check. I mean the literal check. It's hard. Like it's not as cool to be an Under Armour athlete as it is to be a Nike athlete.
I was just about to say, I think in the first couple years of your career, you'd rather be a Nike athlete than an Under Armour athlete.
I read where Under Armour brought Steph Curry in to try to close the deal, too, for Under Armour. It didn't work.
I mean, for a while, it's like Under Armour was going to be an actual competitor. And I'm not even talking about when it first started. I'm talking about, you know, when Steph Curry was winning championships and Tom Brady's winning Super Bowls and Jordan Spieth was winning Masters. Like they had three of the maybe biggest American athletes, or at least the most successful athletes at the time, and they never capitalized. I would ask, when's the last Under Armour commercial that's moved you? Is there one? I can't think of a Steph Curry shoe commercial.
No.
Only thing I think about with Steph Curry shoes is when he dropped either the twos or threes, and everybody made fun of them for how ugly they were. It became a meme for about a week about how ugly they were. I can't think of a single piece of really Adidas advertising or Under Armour advertising, definitely not Puma advertising, but you could think of the Nike commercials, right? Like to me, that's what Nike the machine is really about. Like it creates such good just campaigns. The LeBron James witness, the Tiger Woods comeback, the Serena Williams greatness, like those things they put together, I think, are worth, you know, the maybe taking a little bit less money when you look at a per year perspective. You know, you can already kind of see like Caitlin Clark failing next year in the playoffs, failing next year in the season, and them having their rookie campaign set up with about, like, what are you going to do now? Like, how, what's the next act? And, like, Nike putting some dramatic music behind it and her getting knocked down by a couple of the veterans and stuff like that. And then being like, hey, rookie, now it's time. Or, you know, you can already kind of see Nike already kind of spinning those wheels and creating the narrative of, like, of her career. Mm-hmm. And that's what Nike gives you. So I think she made the right choice.
Yeah. Some other endorsement deal news here. Marvin Harrison Jr., he signed a multi-year deal with New Balance, and he will be part of the crew that helps roll out New Balance's first American football cleat. Obviously, they've a little bit more active in like the baseball market and things like that, but they've signed some NFL athletes in the last couple years. Marvin Harrison Jr., though, the big name in this year's draft class, and he'll help roll out their shoe line as well. But New Balance is kind of starting to make some waves, I think, in that sense as well.
When you say shoe line, do you mean cleats?
Cleats, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we were just talking about this. The only other commercials I can think of for a shoe line besides Nike lately have been New Balance. I would argue they're starting to rise. They might even, you know, they're top of mind with more and more professional athletes, maybe passing Adidas. They're not at the Under Armour level, certainly not at the Nike level, but there's this list of who they've just put together for their roster of athletes. I mean, there's some names recognizable to people like us, maybe not mainstream, but, you know, Chase Young, Jamal Murray, Tyrese Maxey, Shohei Ohtani, definitely noticeable.
Shohei Ohtani is New Balance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aaron Nesmith, Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi was the first guy that I really remember. Like, that was 2019, around the time, you know, he's winning that championship.
Yeah.
Boardman gets paid.
Yeah, that was a great shirt.
Couple of footballers. We talked about Chase Young, obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr., Will Anderson, and then some, you know, premier female athletes, Cameron Brink, Sydney McLaughlin, LeVrone. So, yeah, they're pretty aggressive at this point, it seems.
They're spending money, and I want to say, like, New Balances are cool now. Like, they have shaken the stigma of just being the shoes of, like, white supremacists. Like, that was kind of the joke 4 or 5 years ago whenever you saw the Charlottesville march. Like, oh, they got New Balances. That's what the internet thought. Like, that was kind of the joke. It's like, hey, it's that. It's, say it's the suburban dad wearing them to mow the lawn or wear them out. Like, they have become cool. I don't know if it's because of Kawhi Leonard and Jack Harlow and, like, those deals that they did there, or if it, to me, like, when I see them, I'm like, man, they really owe Kanye West a check. And if I'm Adidas, I'm suing, because when I see all the cool New Balances that get released, like, over the last couple of years, they all just look like the old Yeezys that, like, Kanye can't make anymore with Adidas because he had those comments that were anti-Semitic. It basically seems like they are completely ripping off, especially the Yeezy, I think, 500s. They look a lot like those with the bubbles and, like, the earth tone colors. Like, they look good. They look good. They look like I said, they're basically just ripping off the Yeezys. And, you know, I noticed a couple years ago they started getting sold over retail and, like, doing, like, raffles where you had to, like, enter to win them. Kind of like Jordans and kind of like Yeezys. And, like, you're like, okay, that's how you know you've become, like, a cultural thing, when people feel lucky to give you a couple $100 to wear your stuff. Now, the athletic side, you know, I don't know. I can't really picture any of their basketball shoes. Like, this Kawhi, I know he has a line, but does he have, like, a signature shoe he sells? Are there New Balance Kawhis out there? I've never seen those, if those are the case.
There was a version of that. It wasn't necessarily called Kawhi. It had, but it was his shoe.
That big claw on it, his logo.
Yeah, but now it just feels like, I was literally just in Dick's Sporting Goods over the weekend, and they've got some of them in there, but they're all, it's kind of like one, and they're not bad looking shoes. It's the ones I'm seeing, like, some of the NBA players wearing. I definitely have seen Aaron Nesmith on the Pacers wear them, and Darius Garland. But I mean, that was always my thing with New Balance. When they were trying to do basketball shoes and stuff, they were kind of ugly, and it looked, they're much better looking now.
I mean, I always associated New Balance, if it was going to be a sport, with, like, tennis.
Yeah.
Like, kind of those training shoes there, like, you can get out there and play in those. But, yeah, like, I like that they are becoming a serious competitor, because I never find Under Armour cool. Don't really find Adidas cool. Reebok's dead. Puma flirted around a couple of times that they were going to get serious. You know, they tried to go out and get Zion. They had Jay-Z helping design shoes. They were trying to do all that. Doesn't seem like they've been able to break through past soccer. So, like, you know, if we can bring and make New Balance an actual competitor, I think that's ultimately good.
What about Big Baller Brand?
The Big Baller Brand had a moment in the sun. It burned out, and you know, you could ask, you know, LaMelo and Lonzo, but maybe that's why they started getting hurt. I don't know. That's what LeVar said.
LaMelo's a Puma guy now.
Mm-hmm. That checks out.
Yeah.
He seems like a Puma guy. Anything else, Sam, we need to hit?
Tyrese Maxey won Most Improved Player. He receives 51 first-place votes. Next closest, Kobe White, 32. And Alperen Sengun of Houston will get third place. But, yeah, Tyrese Maxey, obviously, huge year this year. Averaged about 26 a game, 6 assists, 3.7 rebounds and a steal a game. All career highs for him. Feel like that was pretty expected, though.
I don't know, man. I kind of disagree just because, to me, did Maxey get better than he was last year? Like, when you actually look, like, 21 points a game last – or 20 points a game last year and 26 points this year. Like, yeah, there was improvement there. But, like, he also got 5 more shots a game. Like, you're going to score 6 more points if you get 5 more shots. Like, to me, it's like, hey, James Harden's gone, no longer blocking him. Like, Maxey – I think has been that guy really the last 3 years. His numbers went up, and now maybe you think of him as a star, but I think that's more just opportunity. I don't know. Like, the Most Improved Award's so hard to, like, get right. Like, Kobe White, to me, the guy who finished second, he improved more when you actually, like, watch him play. Because he was a guy that could barely get off the bench and, like, you know, get in the rotation for a while, it seemed like.
I just thought there were moments where Maxey had to carry the Sixers when Embiid was out. And, you know, they didn't play that well with Embiid out. But I just felt there were times where he had to be the guy, and he was about the only option as far as an elite scorer. But
yeah, but, I mean, I would just say I don't know if he had that opportunity last year with Harden there controlling the ball all the time and Embiid playing. Like, to me, he was really good last year. I guess is really what I'm saying. Like, it's – he was already, to me, like a fringe star player last year. And now it's just like, hey, you take the ball out of Harden's hands, you put it in his hands, of course he's going to look better.
I wonder who got it last year. Maybe it was kind of a make good, you know what I mean, where they felt he got overlooked last year.
Lauri Markkanen won it last year.
And I think that was deserving. I mean, Lauri went from a throw-in in a trade to like, oh, wow, you could actually, like, this guy's like a missing piece in championship teams if you can get him. I don't know, I just thought Kobe White went from – a bench player to like a guy you look at and like, huh, you know, maybe this is it. He scored 42 points in their little play and win against the Hawks. Like, I don't know. I just thought he made a bigger leap. You could also argue that he just started getting more minutes and opportunities too, I guess.
I think Sengun is like a sneaky, yeah. Like, he's really fun to watch.
If he didn't get hurt, could he have won that, you think?
Maybe. I mean, because he was dominant at certain points of the season.
He's fun to watch.
Yeah.
He's really good. And like you said, if he didn't get hurt, maybe. Because, yeah, I mean, he went from, you know, basically only adding 3 minutes of playing time, went from 15 points a game to 21 points a game and, you know, added an assist. So, I mean, like 21 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. I mean, he was pretty solid. He was pretty solid. I think the Most Improved is a hard award to give. Like, because sometimes, like, guys are just – I have a hard time giving it to guys that are going for like their first or second year to their third year, just because like that's kind of how you're supposed to progress, especially if you're a high draft pick. So like Sengun, maybe that's just like how he's supposed to progress. Maybe that's just natural. Whereas we talked about with Maxey, that's just kind of opportunity. I don't know how much those guys actually got better. Sengun more so got better, I think, but like he's also like in his year 3, like he's supposed to get better.
Maybe there needs to be some sort of qualification in terms of like increase of minutes or something like that in the game.
I don't think people care enough to actually like make it more confusing. I'm making it too much of a deal as it is already.
That whole Houston team got better too, you know what I mean? It's like, so maybe that's the rub off. He benefits from that too.
Yeah. I don't know, like 2022, like John Morant, like in his, was that his second year? What year was John Morant in 2022? How many years has Ja been in the league? I just remember thinking that one was dumb because, like, yeah, he's a number 2 overall pick. Like, for him to win Most Improved implies that he sucked last year. The year before that, he didn't really. He was just a young player. I guess he was in year 3.
Yeah, I was going to say, he came out at 19.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Julius Randle. I think Randle kind of deserved that because he kind of wasted away in L.A. and then Ingram. And I don't know. We spent too much time on this. College football getting shook up by Derek Dooley. maybe? Question mark.
Hell yeah.
Let's talk about it after the break.
You mentioned earlier that I'm a spaces hopper. And I don't know why it made me think of it when I heard this song with the artificially high-pitched voice, but I was monitoring a spaces that was talking about transfer portal stuff the other night, and they had this guy on. He was really a kid that was a FAU insider.
Why are you in this space, Bob?
Well, I don't know. But let me finish, and then we'll get on with the rest of the show. I thought about this yesterday. This dude, if you go look him up, his name's JJ Metz, Metz. He is the youngest college basketball insider out there. He is a kid. I bet you he's like 12 years old, and he was good. He was actually pretty good. He was on this spaces talking. He's talking ball.
Don't end up on a list out here, Bob, listening to minors on the internet. Be careful.
No. It was all there were a lot of other adults on there, and they were saying, hey, man, you know, everybody kind of rolled their eyes at first when they heard you were coming on, but you got great insight. And it's just freaky. Something I would have never expected.
Now, what's this kid's name again?
JJ Metz, Metz.
Sam, make a note of that in case. You know, in the summer when Bob starts, you know, really scraping the bottom of the barrel for guests when we're trying to plan shows.
Yeah,
JJ guy coming on. Trust me, he's solid.
We're going to talk FAU basketball.
Yeah, he's solid. Trust me.
Can only get on for 15 minutes before his babysitter's got to pick him up.
Oh, Sam, that's good. That's good.
The segment's brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Don't put off your dental visits any longer. The folks over at Knoxville Smiles want to help you when it comes to your dental health. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures such as fillings, crowns, bridges, Invisalign, veneers, implants, they can do it all. If you got teeth, they can help. If you don't have teeth, they can probably help you there too. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. I smiled a little bit yesterday seeing Derek Dooley be college football's main character on one of these days, as he is talking about apparently bringing some private equity money in and saying to hell with the college football national championship playoff as it's construed. Says, guys, come on, what are we doing? Let's be a little bit proactive instead of reactive. They're going to leave us. They're going to kick us out. Let's leave them before they kick us out. Let's do our own Group 5 playoff.
Yeah, I almost dismissed it just because it was Derek Dooley. But the more I read about it, it's kind of an interesting concept. I think the question will be, we were talking about during the break, is it somehow interwoven into the college football playoff as we know it, or is it a standalone thing? It doesn't fully specify that. It seems to me that the CFP with their Power Five and their plan would probably not be interested in trying to accommodate this. That would be my opinion. So then if it's a standalone, can it really be something that generates revenue? I mean, we know in this day and age, from a media perspective, TV networks want content, and, you know, I guess it would be more content. But, you know, great quote came from a former Fox Sports executive who is a media consultant today, and he said, you know, if somebody came back to me and asked me to invest in this, my question would be, how do I get my money back? He said, how do I make more than I can in buying AAA corporate bonds at 9% today rather than invest in a game of rice against Texas State?
Yeah, maybe from that perspective, it's not going to make a lot of sense. But you know what my reply to that would be? Saudi money, live, golf. Like, they're not worried about getting a return on investment. They're just worried about you liking them and letting them do their thing and thinking of them as, hey, that's the country that loves sports versus, you know, some of the other stuff that you might think of them for. That's my response to that. Not necessarily, hey, let's build this and turn a profit as much as it is, hey, let's build this, let's get some money behind it to make it feel like a bigger deal, because, you know, the SEC and Big Ten is squeezing us to death when it comes to,
yeah,
you know, the college football expanded playoff.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that in terms of the conventional wisdom is more and more this is just going to become a Big Ten SEC game eventually. We hear that kind of conversation all the time. We all talk about it as fans about why don't they just go and create two super leagues like AFC, NFC, and, you know, separate from the rest of the pack. So, yeah, I could see that. When you mentioned LIV, I couldn't help but think maybe the games are three quarters instead of four. Sam, you with me? You follow me?
I'm all in on that.
Yeah.
Good one, guys. Nailed it. Sam, you're a college sports freak. Your thoughts on the potential Group 5 standalone playoff?
I think it's honestly a pretty good idea.
I concur.
I think that, you know, like with just the current landscape of where football is starting to go, and it's basically just two conferences with the SEC and the Big Ten, it just kind of feels like they started off this playoff idea of like bringing in one of these Power Five or Group of Five teams to have a shot. But, you know, everyone is turning on this game and is realizing that these teams are quickly outmatched, and it's a game for maybe two drives or something like that. And so I think you'll breed some competition within the Group of Fives, and you know, I just think you'll have healthier competition for that. And, you know, I guess maybe some sickos like me, you'll get some engagement in terms of that sense.
Well, it seems like the Gulf is only getting wider.
Yeah.
Because the teams that had a chance to build programs became Power Five schools themselves. Like, you could have convinced me that UCF could have morphed into an actual, like, power threat in the current college football or the new slash current, I guess, now that we're in 2024 playoff format, where like UCF becomes a mainstay in the college football playoff, and that they have, you know, such a big enrollment down in Florida that they maybe could win a game in the actual playoff. But that what happened to them in Cincinnati is that they became Power Five schools. Cincinnati and UCF both got the call up to the Big 12, which now we're left with what? Like, who are our best Group Five schools now? Memphis? FAU? I mean, I don't even know.
Tulane,
like,
something like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like Tulane. Know, okay, Tulane has, I guess, taken that. James Madison was that this year maybe, like, but who knows how they're going to be. But, like, point being, the quality of the Group Five has gotten shrunk already. That gap's only going to get wider with this TV money, which I think is what Derek Dooley's looking at with the college football playoff and the revenue distribution. Says, look, we're getting squeezed out. Let's just try to have our own thing to sell. To which ask the question, would you rather be a Group 5 school that gets a ceremonial playoff invite that leads you to get slaughtered, or would you rather say, like, hey, we're the Group 5 champion?
I think definitely the Group 5 champion.
I think so, too.
For, like, recruiting and stuff like that?
I think so, too.
So in your mind, you guys are framing it like it would be a total standalone thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I don't know if that requires them to forfeit their spot in the playoff or how that works. Maybe they put it on earlier and the winner gets the playoff spot. I don't know how they would want to do it. I don't know.
I actually think
it's too many games probably when you get to that point of like a playoff versus, you know, then get you into the actual playoff. All of a sudden you're asking these Group 5 kids to play like 18, 20 games.
I'm so sucked into the idea of relegation in football. I'd love for just like the champion of the Group 5 to get promoted and like the worst record in Power 5 to go down.
Yeah, and
like
we'll still at some point, that could be a whole special conversation, that proposed Super League thing, because I agree. I like that part of it too. I think if the college football playoffs, if this Group of 5 thing happened, I think they'd be like, have at it. It's fine by us. I don't think it would bother them in the slightest.
No, I don't think it should. And if you're college football, like, I don't think you should be mad at it. I think you should be like, hey, this is probably an event that people are more likely going to watch because people want to watch football and people want to watch games with stakes.
Yeah.
So, like, if you call it a playoff game and you put it on and it's D1, because I'll be honest, I don't really watch the FCS playoffs when they're on. But, like, I even think the Group 5 is going to be so much better than those FCS teams on average, like the quality of player at least. Maybe not the teams, but, like, the level of athlete.
So let me ask you this. If it's hard to compare it right now because they're different seasons. This presumably would be in the same season.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Calendar season. So if you had the NFL and this UFL both playing at the same time, would you have any interest in UFL at all?
I've watched a couple UFL games, to be honest. I like watching the Birmingham Stallions the kickers. Man, the kickers in the UFL bombing those kicks. I think I would probably watch it over the Group 5, but maybe not. I don't know. I can't call it.
I'm talking about NFL, though, if you're comparing the two. My point is
UFL versus NFL, sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying UFL versus this Group 5 playoff. No. Sorry. No.
That's the thing I would worry about if I were athletic directors at these schools. It's like, I guess the money might be enticing enough, and the fact that it could help recruiting, like you said, but it's like, man, we're still just going to be lost in the shuffle if it's in the same season.
I don't know. If you told me the UFL was playing on Wednesday nights, Thursday nights, or, you know, maybe Friday nights or whatever. I mean, not Thursday night, because NFL football is going to be on Thursday night. If you told me it was on the days of the week where the NFL wasn't, maybe I'll have it on in the background, maybe, because I'd be in football mode.
I think it'd have to be something radical like that. You know what I mean?
That's kind of what the Group 5 already does, right, with the Maction and the midweek games. They kind of already do that because they know, like, hey, we can't compete on Saturdays when we're looking for, like, a national audience. They kind of already know that.
Right.
The private equity money is the part of this that I don't necessarily understand. So, like, what do you think they mean by it, Bob? Just taking private money to fund and pay out the schools, to pay for the schools to do this tournament, you know, to help find sponsors? Like, what do they mean by trying to bring in private equity money into this thing?
I would assume there'd have to be some, you know, conference governance. They'd have to invest in creating a structure. So that'd be one thing. That's not a ton of money, but that would be money. Again, it's probably about being self-sustaining or self-sufficient until they can lock in a media deal, because the media deals would be so they'd be tough. They'd have to extricate. You know, a lot of those schools already have existing deals with, well, most instances, it's ESPN or CBS Sports Network. But I think they are probably part and parcel to what they're trying to negotiate for a college football playoff contract too. It complicates all of that. So I would think some of that money is to just get lift off and make sure that it can survive at the beginning.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the promotion and relegation system that the Super League is proposing doesn't really have any of these Group 5 teams in it, right? Like, this kind of, I know there's a couple, but, like, it's not the entire country, right? It's only like 70 to 80 teams. Not 135 or whatever the number is currently. Like, not everybody has a chance to get promoted, right? It's just like certain schools get invited, like Oregon State gets to, you know, and Washington State, those type of schools. And it's not like the Rices of the world aren't getting to get promoted.
Right now, my understanding of it was there were 8 divisions, 7 of them are pretty much locked in with the Power 5 conferences, and then the 8th one is, they called it under division, mm-hmm. and that's the one that has the promotion and relegation.
Right, plan. But like the schools that are in that, do we remember which ones they were? Like
Boise, James Madison, Liberty, Miami of Ohio, New Mexico State, Toledo, Troy, Tulane, UNLV, and UTSA.
Are those just the top 10?
That's like a starting point, right?
Yeah. Right, but did they just take that, like, say, like, hey, this is the current top 10 in the rankings, like, if you do the polls, or I don't know how they got those 10.
Has to be, because New Mexico State just kind of came out of nowhere, okay. And they've had a couple good seasons, so.
It's kind of crazy Memphis isn't on there, right?
Correct.
It's kind of crazy that they wouldn't be included in that 10, but when I just think of the 10 biggest group five programs, like you would think they'd be on there. So, like, yeah. So if you take those, like, there still is 50 teams left over that are not going to matter at all. So if you're Derek Dooley and you're probably coming to the realization that you're just going to kind of be stuck at that level, that maybe you could be a good coach at that level or be an impactful guy at that level. Where is he at currently? Why is he the one talking about this?
I was just thinking the same thing. I thought he was – wasn't he with Alabama or
– I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing. I know obviously he had his time at Louisiana Tech and was an AD, so maybe he's like, hey, I care about this.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, he's a – we'd heard all those stories back in the UT days. He's a detailed guy. So, I mean, he – you know, I could see him working hard to figure something out here.
And like people forget he was a lawyer.
Yeah, like you guys said, I actually think it's an interesting idea. I just think there's still a lot of questions that I have of how would it actually work. But, you know, they're just in the preliminary stages talking about it, right?
But I will say that we don't usually use the words positively together, NCAA and proactive. Usually everything in that sport is so reactive and late.
Right.
I do give Dooley credit for trying to do something before the shoe, you know, drops, before the writing on the wall becomes Sharpie. Just going ahead. Like right now it's just kind of, you can barely see it. It's kind of faded on the wall. Yeah, before the black light comes out and you see what all's on there. Like Dooley's trying to say, hey, let's have a plan and let's try to survive. Because me personally, right now, as it's construed, I wouldn't really care if all those schools disappeared.
Yeah,
I wouldn't care at all. I don't know where I'm at when it comes to your average football fan. I don't have time for those other schools. No thanks. But if they create a product that maybe I enjoy watching, maybe they become relevant. Any other thoughts on this, Sam?
Just think it's I think it could also, you know, create some positive movement, I think, maybe in the transfer portal, because it gives some guys maybe a little bit more of a platform to kind of, you know, throw yourself out there, get some good tape against another quality group five opponent. I think you'll start to see some of that pipeline. You know, you get some more talented group five players that are, you know, get on the radar of some of those big Power Five schools and stuff like that.
So yeah, you're saying they would just use this as a TV product to then be recruited to a bigger school,
basically,
kind of like the UFL and NFL. Which, I mean, again, that's what it is.
But that's like the way that college sports are going these
days. I know, but like, if I'm the Group Five, like maybe just lean into it, man. Like, yeah. Hey, we'll put you on TV. We'll help you get to a better spot. Come here and play for a year or so. Now, in football, it's different than basketball because, you know, freshmen and sophomores aren't going to be as good on average as your basketball freshmen and sophomores, I don't think, at least physically. But, yeah, just, like, lean into, like, hey, we're not actually power football. We know that, but we're okay with it. Because so many times it feels like those schools are trying to pretend like they are.
It's kind of like JUCO baseball almost. Like, JUCO baseball is a respectable product in the JUCO sense, but, like, you know, you still got to cut your teeth in that to go then – get to the power levels. But when you know, when you've got a nice little product there with all those schools put together, I think you can kind of propel yourself up to those Power Five levels.
It's an interesting analogy. There's a lot of major league players that have gone that route and mm-hmm. don't play at the big power schools.
Yeah, I was almost even going to say, like, I think the JUCO baseball players are just much better, like, on average, but the comparison's still there, because there's plenty of guys that probably could have been played at a D1 level, but just either couldn't make the grades or didn't want to make the 3-year commitment.
Yeah,
that are trying to stay open there.
I mean, not even, yeah, and beyond the JUCO levels, like, you know, I'm thinking of like JD Martinez, for example, played at like Nova Southeastern. You know, it's a 4-year school, but you know, nowhere on the radar in terms of you know, notoriety, but produced a really good professional player.
Good chat, good discussion, good job, Derek Dooley.
Derek Dooley is now in the morning show conversation.
He's back, baby.
Who'd have thunk it?
He's back. Let's go to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who real?
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk with Easton Freeze, Broadway Sports, from a Titans perspective ahead of the NFL draft again, make plans to hang out with us digitally Thursday night during the draft as Mark is spearheading our NFL draft live reaction show. Mock draft season finally almost to an end. Thank God.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting, too. I'm looking at, there's about, feels like 100 we could choose from, but I'm just looking at the one from CBS Sports, the latest one that Pete Prisco put out. What's interesting is in the past week, you've seen all sorts of activity moving up and down, like predictions on what would happen. And now I look at this latest one, and it feels like the mock draft that maybe I saw like 3 weeks ago. You know, it's all kind of back to some level of stabilization. There's still a lot of chatter about potential teams looking to trade and move up in the draft. One headline that happened yesterday is supposedly there's reports that the Raiders were being pretty aggressive with Washington trying to move up to that number two pick. So not much mystery in why they would want to do that if that happened, but so far it hasn't happened. The one thing Prisco has put out there, though, that's a bit of a surprise is he has got a new number one overall pick.
What?
Yes.
Hold on.
Scraping the bottom of the
what?
Barrel.
We have a new number one pick?
He's got Jaden Daniels going number one.
Well, I mean, I applaud the Hail Mary to try to drum up some interest, but come on. It's a foregone conclusion, right? It's Caleb Williams.
I think so, too.
Does he have any type of reasoning?
He wrote here, yes, I think he'll be the best quarterback in this class. He's the most improved player I've ever seen in the course of 5 years. That's impressive, and that matters. He'll also be Lamar Jackson-like.
Do we agree with that take, that he is the most improved player?
I don't see it with him, man. I mean, I see him as a high first-round pick. Caleb Williams, to me, is the only quarterback I'm really, really interested in this group. This whole Lamar Jackson, like, there's only one like that, and that's Lamar Jackson, and that's why they're comparing him. But my point is, that's pretty lofty expectation and rare, I would say.
Yeah, I just don't know if I'd call Jaden Daniels the most improved player of all time, just because I feel like he was, like, really good his freshman year. I feel like he took the nation by storm his freshman year in 2019, and, I mean, he was pretty good and looked like a guy that, you know, you were buying a lot of stock in. Then he kind of, you know, flatlined and got, you know, regressed, and then, you know, morphed into an absolute monster in 2023. But, like, it's nothing that different than what another LSU quarterback in Joe Burrow did. Like, Joe Burrow, to me, is about as improved as you could be.
I agree with that.
Like, Joe Burrow, you know, didn't even get to play his first couple of years. Jaden Daniels at least was a baller his freshman year. Just seems crazy. If Prisco is just ranking his, you know, top players, then okay. If he wants to call Daniels number one, that's fine. But the Bears are not taking Jaden Daniels. Yeah. That's dumb.
No, I agree. Yeah, and he had Caleb Williams number two going to Washington. I'm sure Washington would love that opportunity.
Right now, Caleb Williams is minus 20,000 to be the number one overall pick. If you want Jaden Daniels, you can get him at plus 7,500.
Here's Prisco's write-up on Caleb Williams. I keep hearing generational when it comes to this kid when talking to scouts, but he needs to clean up a lot of stuff for me to make that claim. Having said that, there's a ton to like. He'll be a damn good player. It's like, I just – that's hardly provocative stuff. He needs to clean up a lot of stuff.
Well, it's just funny to me the way Pete Prisco writes. He's kind of in the same boat to me as Greg Doyle, where I talk about, like, national guys that I just don't really like that I found, you know, back in 2008 2009. Prisco to me is just a curmudgeon, and I just love the way he writes that. Like, yeah, all the NFL scouts and people I talk to that work for the NFL making these decisions, they think he's generational. But he has to prove it to me.
Yeah.
If I'm Caleb Williams, I don't give a damn what you think, Pete Prisco. Cut the check. Draft me number one.
Drake May, number three to New England. No surprise there. A little bit of a surprise. I don't know what you guys are seeing or hearing. we've talked about how impressive Malik Nabers is. He's got him going in the fourth pick ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr.
When you're looking at storylines heading into the draft, I mean, Washington, it seems, from what everyone reports, it seems like Washington is 100% locked in on Jaden Daniels. Like, I saw something yesterday from a guy that was like, hey, I've talked to a lot of people, and no one in Washington, no one around Washington has given me any inclination that it's not a slam dunk for Daniels. They think he's clear-cut better than Drake May, which, you know, when you're talking about these mock drafts a year from now, keep in mind, like, how long Drake May was thought to be the number one or number two overall pick, and now it's like, hey, he's not even, you know, really in the mix for those, it feels like. Jaden Daniels, of course, came out of nowhere, if you ask Pete Prisco, but, like, he did kind of, in an NFL draft perspective, come from, like, hey, this is an interesting prospect, even after the LSU season was done, to, like, now, like, kind of seems like a lock at number two. His stock has risen so much. Washington apparently was turning down a bunch of offers, a bunch of trade offers of people trying to move up to number two, saying that nope, they're in love with who they're going to get.
Yeah. So, yeah. So then again, we talked about Drake May, Nabers at four, Harrison at five, another receiver at six, with the Giants taking Rome Odunze. Your Titans, we'll be able to talk with Easton about this. Is it going to be Joe Alt? That's what most people believe. Dallas Turner going at eight. On one of these mocks, again, it was just crazy. I saw Dallas Turner dropping like into the teens, which seemed pretty precipitous. So I don't think that happens.
The good and bad thing about your team sucking, bad thing is your team sucks and it's not fun to watch. The good news is, though, you don't really have to pay attention to too many of these prospects. Like, for me, as a Titans fan, Sam, I don't know about you, but like, I haven't gotten down many of the list of these names. Like, I've been kind of focused on, okay, Nabers, Alt, you know, for a little bit it was Bowers, a couple of the other offensive linemen that maybe you fall to, you know, you trade back for, and you get the guy from Penn State, or you call Latham from Alabama. But like, I haven't paid attention to a lot of the guys. So if you say like Dallas Turner, I don't really know where he's projected or where he's supposed to really go, because he hasn't really been on my radar. I've seen a couple of people try to link the Titans to him because I know he's like the best pass rusher, but like, I haven't really dove too much past him just because team sucks. We're drafted at the top of it. I'll circle back around at the top of round two.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like, you know, I mean, I think barring any, and we'll talk to Easton about that, but I think barring any, you know, big trade ups or someone snagging someone unexpected, I do feel like Tennessee's probably got their hands on like three guys that they're wanting to draft at that seven spot. And if those guys aren't there, I'm assuming they'll probably trade out of it, because I don't think anybody else kind of in that conversation is like that hit or miss, or that much of a blue chip prospect.
It's so funny that that's like the mindset, and that's what everybody says around the draft. It's like, hey, if they don't get the guy they want, just trade back. The problem with that a lot of times is, like, you got to have people want to trade up, too. Like, it's not as easy to just be like, hey, we're going to trade back, because, you know, I don't know if you get past the top six, if there's a guy that people are really in love with that they'll trade up for. Like, maybe Minnesota, maybe a team tries to jump them. If you really love J.J. McCarthy, like, maybe the Titans will be in a good swing spot there.
Someone's going to trade up for that third quarterback.
Fourth quarterback.
Fourth.
Yeah, sorry.
Fourth quarterback. I mean. Yeah, like maybe someone's in love with him, and you know he might end up being the third quarterback taken. But like, yeah, you would think someone's trading up for him, but they might look and say, yeah, the Titans ain't taking one. We'll wait.
Pete Prisco's got Penix going 11 to Minnesota and McCarthy at 12 to Denver. At least on the McCarthy front, that seems a little more properly situated to me. We talked about this yesterday, but it's interesting that he's – it's only one spot, but he's got Penix ahead of him.
I'll be ready for this to be over with tomorrow. I love the draft. I love the, you know, the talk going up to it, but it definitely, like, eventually, like, it's a firm ceiling on how much I could do with it.
There's definite fatigue at this point. I agree.
But we're not there yet. We got another segment, Easton Freeze, Broadway Sports. Good look at it from a Titans perspective, and, you know, also around the AFC South. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
When it's past high noon,